You're listening to The Naked Scientist with Dr. Chris and Dr. Kat, and we're talking about natural disasters, the really big stuff, volcanoes, earthquakes and all that malarkey. And we're joined by Peter Kellerman, who's from Columbia University. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Kat.
Hello. Thanks for coming all the way over from the States.
Oh, yeah, just for this.
Just for this. It's great. So tell us a bit about earthquakes. What's happening when an earthquake's happening?
Well, in general, what happens is that there's already a fault surface and there's friction on the fault surface. And as that's overcome, it becomes much easier for the rocks to slide by one another. So that's really crucial, that it's hard to get it started. And then once it gets started, it runs away.
And are all earthquakes the same? I mean, you sort of hear an earthquake has happened. Is everything the same? Are they the same speed? Where do they happen in the earth?
Well, there's a huge variety of earthquakes. And maybe I'll just take the where question first. And that is, you know, there's... The big earthquakes are where the tectonic plates are sliding by one another, one way or another. And so the very biggest ones are in the subduction zones where oceanic plates are being slid beneath the continents.
So where do we have these around the world?
Well, they're in the Ring of Fire, so-called, or the seismic zone next to the Ring of Fire around the Pacific, and then in the Lesser Antilles and elsewhere.
So these are places like Japan that are particularly susceptible.
And then, of course, that kind of plate boundary turns into what we call a strike-slip fault, where plates are sliding by one another, and that's the big deal in San Francisco.
So the sort of earthquakes you're looking at, they're a particular type, aren't they, called intermediate depth. What does that mean?
Well, we were interested in those. I mean, first of all, I have to tell you, I'm not a seismologist. I'm a geologist. I just work on rocks. But we got interested in intermediate depth earthquakes because of things we saw in the rocks. And intermediate depth earthquakes have been hard for seismologists to understand because they occur beneath a big pile of rock that could be 50 or 100 kilometers thick. And so the ordinary kind of sliding on a fault surface is very difficult when you've got 100 kilometers of rock sitting on top of you. So we see these shear zones that formed at those depths in the mantle of the Earth that are now exposed by plate tectonics. And you can see that there was no fracture, but there was a zone of very, very highly localized deformation. And sometimes you can see that these rocks got so hot that they melted.
And are these types of earthquakes particularly damaging?
Yeah, they're just as bad as the shallower kind. There have been some really big ones in Bolivia that were quite damaging to cities.
And we've got a caller now who wants to talk about earthquakes. Is that Mark?
Hello there.
Hello. What's your question?
My question is, when the geologists and seismologists talk about earthquakes, they very rarely mention the influence of tides. Many of the earthquakes, including the Boxing Day earthquake that caused the tsunami in the Indian Ocean a couple of years back, happen at time of very high tides. And I just wonder what your geologist had to say about that.
There is a well-known cyclicity with tides for micro-earthquakes, and presumably that extends to macro-earthquakes. There's this idea of sort of self-organized criticality, that things get poised on the brink of failure, and then just some very, very small phenomenon is all it takes to push them over the edge. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if there was a correlation in general between great earthquakes and tides.
Yes, I think you'll find if you look at many larger earthquakes and volcanic eruptions, if you just check the tide patterns, you'll find that they often happen at periods of higher than average tides.
Right, but that doesn't mean that if you live in San Francisco, you should worry every time the tide is higher than average.
No, but you could be aware at that particular time rather than other times.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I suppose that the point that Mark's making to us, Peter, is that the moon is exerting a gravitational effect on the Earth, and hence, I suppose, if you've got water, big bodies of water moving, that's quite a big weight pushing down, isn't it? And I suppose that could make a difference to the way in which plates and tectonic interaction zones actually do interact, and therefore might actually suddenly release all the pent-up energy.
Without a doubt, there is a correlation, and you can watch now that we have instruments on the seafloor regularly, you can watch the mid-ocean ridges kind of breathe with the tide. The earthquakes and the hydrothermal water coming out, the hot water coming out, goes with the tidal cycles.
Thanks for that, Mark. That's a good question.
Yep, totally
really
good.
Interesting. Good having you on the program.
Thank you. Bye.
It's interesting because I, for one, was quite shocked. I looked at the US Geological Survey's website today to see, because they monitor earthquakes that are going on all around the world all the time, and I didn't realise that yesterday there were 20 two earthquakes. Today, at lunchtime, there had already been 12 earthquakes, one of them in the middle of the Pacific, measuring almost six on the certain scale that we've been talking about this evening, as part of our teaser. And I was quite surprised, actually, at how many there were and how strong they were.
Well, actually, it's kind of a matter of definition. And as our instruments get better, there are going to be more and more earthquakes that people are reporting. So the magnitude 1 and magnitude less than 1 earthquakes are extremely frequent and happen for all sorts of reasons, having to do, you know, for example, people pumping water out of the ground.
And how is our knowledge about the sort of causes of earthquakes, some of the work that you've been doing, is it helping us to predict where earthquakes are going to happen any better?
Well, one of the most important outcomes of our research is the idea that even below the so-called brittle ductal transition, where it's very difficult for rocks to fracture, there can be non-steady deformation in the earth. And because the mantle is much, much stronger than the crust, if the mantle is moving in a non-steady way, sort of jerking forward and then standing still for centuries, that's going to be extremely influential in terms of causing shallower crustal earthquakes. So if it is a factor, and we're not sure yet, it's something you'd have to know in order to predict the shallower earthquakes.
Thank you very much. That's Peter Kellerman, who is from Columbia University. He's in Cambridge for a conference at the moment, and he kindly agreed to drop in and tell us about his work on earthquakes.
The Naked Scientist Podcast, brought to you by thenakedscientist.com.